Chapter 15. The night sky over Armagh was clear, a sable canopy strewn with glitter and frost like a thousand jewelled hoards carelessly stirred together.
"You are absolutely clear about the purpose of this assignment?"
"Yes, sir, thoroughly. Meet with Gabrosin Mav, introduce myself as an operative from an unnamed star-faring polity, persuade him that we share his goal of overthrowing the Shuskar, and assure him of our assistance." Sam paused. "Which, sadly, does not extend to shipments of arms."
During their clandestine pursuit of Gabrosin Mav's stolen vessel, Rensik had listened in on communications between them and several other rebel groups, including Tloskin Ray. When it became clear that Mav and Ray were agreeing to meet each other, with little trust on either side, Rensik proposed a low-key intervention.
"Sidebar dissent aside, you appear to be properly briefed," said the drone. "Stress our wide-ranging and unhindered access to all Shuskar communications and point out that we can provide the chain of leadership with accurate advance notice of all enemy troop and vessel movements. That should sweeten the deal."
Lieutenant Sam Brock, resigned to Rensik's strategy, nodded gravely.
"What of the flotilla of troop transports now on their way here? Is it permissible to mention them, sir?"
"Leave them to me. Just focus on brokering cooperation between Gabrosin Mav and Tloskin Ray. Stress the importance of being seen as allies while their Armagh revolt is getting underway, rather than carving lumps out of each other."
"And you will make sure that the flotilla never makes planetfall?"
"Hacking into their Stone Age navigationals will be child's play," Rensik said. "Once I've got them locked into loop maneuver patterns, I shall hurry back here and find out how your negotiations are progressing."
Brock nodded and went over to sit on a mossy boulder near the cliff edge. Rensik's shimmer ship was a grey, bulbous shape half hidden by the bushy fringe of a stand of stunted trees, their foliage too meagre to block the soft, pearly glow emanating from the open hatch. Other, similar, straggly copses were dotted back along the high, dark mountain valley which stretched off behind them. From the cliff edge, they could see beyond a long, jagged ridge the blazing radiance of Armagh City. Bright, tapered towers rose amid clusters of square blue faceted buildings, from whose roofs sprouted numerous pillars of light. Flying craft hovered and swooped through the city, gathering mainly near an asymmetrical structure that was engulfed in fire and gouting spark-laden smoke into the night sky. There were other lesser fires on the city's periphery, and several scattered throughout the noble estates to the east. Rensik had expected more, going by some of the comm traffic being intercepted by the shimmership sensors. What was certain was that the Gruxan Rebellion had taken hold in a number of strategically important areas and had a real chance of success, so long as the Chainer insurgents kept the Governor's troops trapped in their garrison 20 miles away on the coast, and the Shuskar flotilla was halted.
"Time I was leaving," said the drone. "It's still less than an hour before your meeting with Gabrosin Mav. Shall I transport you down to the riverbank?"
"I'd prefer to arrive when they do," Sam said. "It's a good view from here, and the breeze is very light, so when they put in an appearance, I'll just deploy the wing pack, glide down, and walk into view."
"Is the translation pill working? If you are having problems, I can have one of the fabricators stamp out another variant. Perhaps a different vocabulary syntax balance in the RNA analog."
"It seems to be working," Sam said.
"I listened to the comm recordings you provided, and I can understand nearly everything now." "Good. And the personal shield I gave you should keep you safe. Well short of cannon-caliber plasma rounds."
"Comforting to know, sir," she said.
"Sounds like you're ready, but if a dire situation develops, don't forget about the panic button on my handcom," Brock said.
"I think I'm fully prepared, sir."
"Good. Explaining your demise would be awkward and tedious."
The drone Rensik rose from the very lip of the cliff's edge where it had anchored itself.
If all goes according to plan, I shall return to collect you in about 6 hours. But since the cosmos laughs at plans and those who make them, perhaps we should treat that as a flexible aspiration.
Ah, the realist approach.
The bright cornered cuboid glided over to the shimmer ship.
Good luck, Lieutenant, the drone said, and try not to scare the locals.
I shall be the epitome of benevolence, sir.
Once back inside his vessel, Rensic resynced his analytic cores with the onboard sensor hub while the autonav took care of the repulsor liftoff, a steady ascent into the atmosphere. For the last 2 hours, the long-range detectors had been tracking that four-ship flotilla since its launch from a world called Venstak, about a third of the way round the war cage's encircling grid of planets. Three of them were transports, each carrying 1,000 battle-hardened troops of a species called the Avang. The fourth ship was the flagship, heavily armed and, unlike the others, capable of hyperspace travel. That was where the command nodes would be found, so that was his primary target. The flotilla was burning up the distance to Armag with very powerful reaction drives, giving them an ETA of less than 3.5 hours. Rensic decided to make a micro-hyperjump, thereby intercepting the flotilla after a flight time of roughly 7 minutes, ample time in which to take stock of their mission. The shimmer ship's hyperdrive was engaged a moment or two after departing the upper atmospheric boundary. Transition took several seconds, and the sensor hub cognitives switched to its hyperspace presets as a matter of course. Rensic had seen scan data of the war cage's hyperspatial substructures during the stealth pursuit of Gabrosan Mav's vessel on its approach to Armag. But now, here he was, travelling into its convoluted interior. Chains of worlds, over 300 of them, orbited the war cage's sun, all held in place by force field frameworks of astounding sophistication, powered by massive energy converters feeding off the sun's fusion reaction. In hyperspace, the frameworks manifested as a vast interconnecting web of field lines, a mazy obstacle of huge rods and stalks of energy through which the ship's autonav was able to neatly maneuver. While part of his awareness was overseeing the route, he devoted his greater thought range to the strategic overview, and his earlier assessment concerning the disparity between the technological level of the war cage and the technical abilities of the dominant Shuskar authority was now deeper and undeniable. From what the shimmer ship had gleaned from the few archives linked to Armag's rudimentary data web, the Shuskar homeworld had been a later addition, brought into the great harbour of benevolent harmony as the war cage was then known. They played only a small part in the schisms and clashes of those times, but over the following centuries and millennia, their stature grew. As the Great Harbour journeyed among the civilizations of the Andromeda Galaxy, fostering tyrannies and chaos along the way, the rivalries and enmities between its own worlds provided a stairway of strife, which the Shuskar eagerly took advantage of. Eventually, they ascended to the leadership of a fractious alliance, large and strong enough to compel those worlds still ruled by the Builder's descendants to surrender or face obliteration. Other crises came along in the centuries that ensued, the most significant being the struggle against some kind of machine intelligence called the Apparatark, and a comparatively more recent one called the Beshefis Uprising, a workers' rebellion which spread across several worlds until it was put down with ruthless brutality. Then, as now, the Shuskar's battlefield strength was derived from militarized cadres that drew their members from the underclasses on almost all the occupied worlds of the war cage. The Grand Escalade Tournament was an early development, with considerable resources devoted to fostering and popularizing a competitive culture, even to the point of concocting grudges and feuds based on minor or imagined slights and insults. The bouts themselves were shown all across a network of community screens, either as live casts of real-time battle bouts or as repeats of past encounters. And it was abundantly clear that the Shuskar, by now long accustomed to their position of supreme dominance, had allowed their command hierarchy to ossify into habit and tradition. Outweighing that, however, was the adaptive tactical edge of the Bout armies, battle-hardened by centuries of competition against a range of opponents in a wide variety of locales. Combine this with the high-tech level of war-cage ships, many possessing self-repair systems devised by the original builders, and the result was a fearsome assault force capable of breaking through the defences of almost any planet in this part of the galaxy. Three worlds in the war cage were key to the Shuskar military preeminence: Dushkel, Venstak, and Nagolga, the fleet worlds. In addition to huge repair yards and semi-automated component factories, there were also vast underground ship arsenals, thousands of vessels stored and ready to be woken to battle by specific codes. Unfortunately, due to the rudimentary nature of onboard smart systems, these ships required sizable, well-trained crews, something that the underpopulated war cage worlds, hamstrung by low levels of education, were unable to provide. The drone Rensic was musing on the three fleet worlds and speculating on how forces of Chena insurgents could overcome their large garrisons when an exterior problem wrenched his attention away. The Autonav was steering the shimmer ship along a laboured, more tortuous route in response to the fine, multi-layered force field barriers that were being generated directly ahead. And behind, the succession of huge mesh barricades springing up all along the ship's course put paid to any notion of deceleration. Yet the current dodging and twisting was becoming increasingly hazardous. Very cunning. A counter-ingress system designed to trap and capture any intruder sneaking in from hyperspace, perhaps even crush and destroy them. I could slip down to a lower level of hyperspace, but that would hamper my plans. Back to normal space then, and resume on reaction drive. The shimmer ship's hyperdrive disengaged its field matrix and the enclosing force field meshes melted into the inky black of space within the war cage. All the worlds bound to that encircling grid gleamed like shiny beads in the harsh light of its sun. Long-range sensors had located the Shuskar flotilla, and the drone ship was underway, intercept course laid in, reaction drive output ramping up. Stealth counter-detects were running, and drive emission masking agents were being released. In a matter of 6 minutes, the shimmer ship would be matching course and velocity with that command vessel. Then Rensic could commence hacking. An alarm spiked across Rensic's extended awareness. The autonav took evasive actions, even as the sensor feed showed the drone the kilometres-long meshed force field structure that scythed through the patch of space through which the shimmer ship had been passing the briefest of moments ago. Its shape was part wing, part stretched out scoop, with a fringe of spikes and tentacles. It seemed to protrude from what the sensors identified as an unstable hyperspace aperture, and, indeed, having failed to ensnare the shimmer ship, it suddenly shrank back into the aperture, which then vanished. Then more apertures began appearing directly ahead, scattered all along Rensic's intercept course. How annoyingly persistent, the drone thought, and effective. Rensic had to divert considerable cognitive processing resources to the autonav, now switching to combat evasion imperatives. The shimmer ship threw itself into tight dodging coils, series of sharp turns, slide slips and jinks as massive force field wings proliferated and closed in. And steadily, with every lurch in this crazed, whirling, hurtling pursuit, the shimmer ship's intercept course slipped behind the flotilla's true position. A swift appraisal made it clear that only a daring ploy could counteract the mazy trap that was drawing in closer and tighter. So the drone Rensic took direct control of the shimmer ship and sent it spiralling down the 30-kilometre length of one immense snaring force field wing, streaking towards the unstable aperture at its root. At the same time, Rensic fed the parameters of a hyperspace microjump into the navigationals, triggering it a mere 1.8 seconds before impact.
The unleashed transboundary forces shattered the aperture and caused a radiating burst of variable state energy, which disrupted the welter of force field structures, cluttering the vicinity of hyperspace on the other side of the aperture. 2.7 seconds later, he once again emerged from hyperspace. This time, the shimmer ship was a mere 93 kilometers away from the Shuskar flagship. The construct drone swerved his little vessel round, and on a tail of blue plasma energy, it leapt forward. Even as more twisting apertures began to appear, leaking silver-grey radiance for a moment before pale force field stalks began to protrude and unfurl. Rensik studied the scans of the flagship, still sketchy as details were gleaned instant by instant. The rest of the flotilla were now too far away, so the safest place to be was either inside or right up close to the flagship, and that was his goal. Seconds passed in a blizzard of data flux and flow, the fine detail of micro-balanced power manoeuvring and info packets from the sensors as they probed the Shuskar flagship's interior. And exterior. Narrowing down unmonitored locations safe enough for a makeshift mooring and close to possible entry points. In microseconds, alternatives were considered and discarded and an optimal selection made, instantly followed by course corrections and finely assessed thrust curves. The flagship's crewed vicinity sensors were sidestepped, and 14.7 seconds later, the shimmer ship was settling into position on the vessel's midsection underhull, between a pair of bulky fulcral housings. Even though the original builder's designs were sophisticated, in some respects there were curious gaps in their knowledge, like ship shielding. There were rudimentary anti-energy shields, which seemed to rely on some complex and obsessively clumsy method of rechargeable banks. Thus, it was the physical structure of the hull on which the crew depended for protection. Layers of heavy alloys and fiber crystal analogues, which were designed to absorb weaponry punishment. And it was the inevitable gaps and holes which Rensik knew would allow him access to the ship's interior. A paraprobe had already been prepared, and deep scans had found a suitable point of entry on the hull. Rensik was sinking his awareness with the paraprobe even as it was nudged forth from its finger-sized recess. Tiny beads swiveled and expelled thready jets which pushed it towards the buckled edge of a hull plate. The drone's awareness was a multi-layered data flow, the visual feed from the probe overlaid with basic schemata drawn from the scans and further overlaid with a power grid map highlighting problematic areas. The probe burrowed through the hull, using tiny cutters to penetrate seals or gain access to pipes. The deeper in it went, the larger the gaps and channels, the faster the progress, and before long, Rensik's probe was weaving along subsupply conduits between the command deck and what seemed to be estate cabins, heading swiftly towards the bridge. All the control systems on the flagship were hardwired, so it wasn't long until the probe discovered a high-level data routing hub, which opened the door to all the bridge systems. A growing familiarity with builder design allowed Rensik quickly to shuffle through the operational arrays. Finding out how to program the autopilots of the entire flotilla, he then set the directives with an encrypted lockout but kept them prepped to engage only on his command, once his business aboard the Shuskar vessel was complete. As he winnowed down the streams of Shuskar data, he came across reference to prisoners and their transfer to detention. There were also some data from crude medical tests, but untranslatable terminology obscured the ultimate intention. Then he uncovered a vid file archive subsystem, and seeing them for himself heightened an already piqued curiosity. The two prisoners were clearly human females, which prompted various questions and speculations, chief being the possibility that they were part of this Pike's crew, or perhaps passengers that had been captured. And why would these Shuskar techs be so interested in human biology? Something enigmatic was going on here. The humans would need to be examined and questioned. The drone quickly located the detention cells in question and calculated the quickest route by which he could wend his way through the decks while compiling a list of all the hatches that would have to be sealed to ensure safe passage. If I were watching some sweaty organic performing such an infiltration, I would, without hesitation, call it an act of insane bravado, he thought, as he edged out of the shimmer ship's hatch. This is what happens when you spend too much time in their company. A service port irised open to let him inside the hull, contracting shut behind him and cutting off the meagre light of the stars and the war cage's array of worlds. Such a brazen intrusion could not go unnoticed by the flagship's security net, and alarms began sounding throughout the decks. Via several emergency venting ducts, the construct drone was able to gain access to an interdeck maintenance shaft that took him down three levels to a rotary storage unit along the corridor from the detention cell. With a range of protective and interventioner fields at the ready, Rensick floated out into the corridor. Light levels were subdued, but his sensors still registered the decorative patterns on the bulkheads, strings of interlocking hooked symbols, some in different shades. Small nodules on the ceiling flashed, while a harsh squawking reverberated along the passageways. A helmeted Shuskar appeared at a junction just up ahead, saw the drone, and reached for a hand weapon. But Rensick was quicker. A solid field projection slapped the guard off its feet, while a finely tuned energy jolt put it to sleep. But, from the thudding coming from some other junction hatches, it was clear that others were working hard at forcing them open. Rensick sped along to the detention cell, forced the electronic lock, and glided inside. As he had already seen, there were two inclined couches, both enclosed by transparent shells. In one was the prone, naked figure of a sedated human female, just as the basic medical data suggested. But the human in the other capsule had undergone some kind of drastic partition. Instead of one body, there were a number of small, pale forms which vaguely resembled newborn creatures, their skin waxy and gleaming, tiny, clutching hands making slow, random motions. One reasonable hypothesis was that these prisoners were the subjects of some kind of exotic genetic experiment, but without detailed study, further speculation was pointless. Rensick unsealed the couch holding the intact human, deployed gripping fields, and left the detention cell, carrying the woman beneath him. Updates from the paraprobe and the shimmer ship let him know that the attempts to break into his secure area were going poorly, but that it was only a matter of not much time before one of the hatches gave way. Rensick already knew that the way out would be different from the way in, and swiftly flew along to what looked like a gathering room, hovered over a particular spot on the floor, deposited the human nearby, then proceeded to tear up the decking with dense, hard-field tools. Directly underneath was a small chamber with a single lockable door, as there was on the deck below that, from which there was a short, fairly direct route via a maintenance booth to an airlock. He was just pushing aside sliced sections of the ceiling beneath when a voice came over on the crew address system.
Who or what are you? You have abducted one of my personal assets, much to my irritation. I surmise that you are a stranger, some box of outlandish parts stirred in with a brute capacity for tactics and dispatched to unleash villainy. Know, then, that you have earned the blood-sharp enmity of the Gunlord Extrahuld. If ever we meet in battle, you will learn exactly what that means.
What? That your nefarious, boring powers only work at close range? Rensick thought, as he lowered the human female down through the gaping hole. The room below was long and narrow, its walls covered in racks that looped from top to bottom. With the human lying unconscious off to the side, Rensik first closed up the hole above, fast welding what metal components were available, before starting on the deck, cutting aside plastic matting and ripping out linked tiling, digging into the underdeck cabling and meshes, chopping and widening, then punching through to the next chamber. Minutes later, he was down in a low-lit stretch of passageway, working on the lock for a maintenance booth with the human luggage hanging beneath him. The lock was proving a little more demanding than others, and he had to fake a recognition signal signifying that the scanner had received a stored and approved dermal pattern. As the heavy hatch began to open, his defensive sensors picked up an object racing towards him. It was one of the ship's lowly repair bots, retasked to attack with its laser welder burning bright and hot. Rensik snatched it with a longer extensor field, exerted some focused pressure, and snapped off the welding prong. But amusement turned to surprise when more repair bots started pouring out of their floor-level hutch slots. The construct drone tossed the broken bot at the new arrivals, swung the human through the half-open hatch, then swiftly closed it behind him. Once in the booth, he used codes extracted earlier by the probe to switch the airlock into its maintenance mode, which locked out the main inner hatch and activated the emergency access panel, a heavy section of the main lock which had to be physically opened. Rensik again deployed fields for bracing and for gripping the manual lever. A sharp banging commenced from the inner hatch, along with the whine of power tools, but he was reasonably sure that he would be back outside the ship before his pursuers made it through. Communicating via the paraprobe, he had instructed the shimmer ship to engage the full range of stealth measures on its way across the flagship's uneven, protrusion-profuse hull. So, when the construct drone emerged from the service hatch, with his still insensible human passenger enclosed in an atmosphere-tasked force field pod, the ship was just arriving. In moments, handler fields deployed by the shimmer ship pulled them both inside, slid and sealed the entryway, and quickly repressurized the compartment to the human optimum. "Well, that's a relief," Rensik thought. "I've not had cause to use up that amount of cell capacity since, well, since Darien. But at least I got talked at by one of the fabled Shiskar gunlords. Sounded as if he has a very high opinion of himself, but I'm sure we can do something about that." The construct ordered the shimmer ship cognitives to lay in a mid-short hyperjump out with the war cage, followed by a return to the present rendezvous coordinates on the planet Armag. Then he turned his attention to his guest, preparing his analytic nanolabs for a battery of extensive biomedical tests.